Race and Caste. Lesson 2. Slavery, Indentured Labor, and the Making of the Modern World. This week, we will look at some important historical works to answer the very broad question, how did the institutions of slavery and indentured labor and migration create the modern world? Slavery in the US started, according to Eric Williams, because there wasn't enough people to create large-scale production in the sugar, tobacco, and cotton industries. Slavery didn't start because Americans were evil or because they lacked some virtues, but because of economics. Slavery was necessary to keep the production large-scale. And for this slavery, the Americans turned to the aborigines of the land they had occupied. And after that, they turned to Africa. Slave labor is inefficient, according to Williams. Free labor is much more efficient. But for large-scale production, the big farms can reduce and decrease their costs and make much more profitable use of their land than smaller farms. The profits that are gained from those industries pay for the inefficient use of slaves. But this was only because free labor was not readily available. If there were more free laborers around, slave labor would not be necessary because it would have been more expensive. Slave labor is unskilled. It has to be, because Americans did not spend time educating their slaves. No one does. Education of the slaves was banned. Because of this, the use of slaves to cultivate land was inefficient. It destroyed the soil, the ground. It wasn't intelligent farming. Because of this, Eric Williams writes, the slave planter must constantly have new land because he keeps destroying his own. In a place where new land is always readily available, this problem of using slave labor can be overcome. It was cheaper to use expensive slaves to cultivate new land than to go over your old land with expensive workers who had their freedom. The story was always the same in slave societies. They must quickly take up new land and grow and cultivate. Slavery didn't happen because of racism, Williams writes, but racism was the consequence of slavery. In fact, there were many slaves in the Americas, Irish, English, criminals from England, for example, but many people who were simply abducted and taken to the Americas and sold as slaves. But for many reasons, it was economically not a valuable decision to get white slaves. According to Williams, escape was much easier for the white slave, for example. The black slave would not be able to settle somewhere else as easily. He was always being seen as different. The language, the land was foreign to him. Racial difference made it easier to justify slavery of the black people from Africa. More importantly, Eric Williams writes, the black slave was cheaper than the white slave from Europe. So soon, European slaves were no longer brought in, and African slaves became the only source of indentured labor. The slave traders had now learned many things from the previous kidnappings of white slaves from England and were now very good at their job. Bristol in England now became one of the central locations for slave trade from Africa. They had become rich from the white slave trade and now were experts. The African slaves were late to a system of slavery that had already been created and improved over the years. Williams writes, the slavery of African people was because it was cheap, not because they were black. The ideas that black people were less human, less intelligent, and other racist ideas came after it became clear that they were cheaper. Sugar, tobacco, cotton, needed a large number of workers. These were not available freely. Slavery was needed. The cheaper slaves were black. Racism was used to justify this. Racism was an afterthought, according to Williams, but Paul Gilroy, another author, says that slavery was not just economics, but also important for the identity of black people in Europe and USA, and the identity of Europe and America itself. According to Paul Gilroy, slavery was a terror, which was not simply an economic event. It was a terror which was and is at the heart of the black experience in Europe and America. In many ways, the idea of black identity comes from slavery and the experience of that terror. For the West or Europe and America, slavery created the idea of themselves as master, allowed them to become the most powerful societies in the world. What slavery did was to create a culture of blackness, which was based around movement across the ocean, but which was not just about race. Slavery was a forced migration of people out of their homes, away from their families, which created modern European identity as well as black identity in America and Europe. Race, ethnic groups, nationality are therefore nothing but construction, according to these authors. These constructions came out of migration, out of movement. Slavery gave birth to the black identity and to the West. Today we see this, how race and how some people see people divided into races is so closely connected to different countries. How did that happen? How did it happen that many countries also have an ethnic group that is dominant and identified with that country? Radhika Mongia, in the book Indian Migration and Empire, writes that it was migration that created nations and the idea that people belong to a nation's land. Today, many countries which have different ethnic groups have situations where they say that one ethnic group is more at home in the nation than others. Where you are from, is something important. It is linked to a land. And we often mark this with a passport. Radhika Mongia looks at the passport and how it was created to show that actually it was migration and movement that came before the idea of nations. In the 19th century, it was very important concern for many people to show that Indian migration was free, that they were not slaves, so that they could use them to go to work. They could use them for work without breaking the law. This allowed Indians to be moved to different parts of the world, like Kenya, Fiji, and Caribbean, and many other places. As long as people were moved under more or less slave contracts, but sort of free, there was no concern from the colonial powers. In fact, Mongia shows that colonial countries tried to make more Indians qualify for migration because it would mean cheap labor for them in the colonies like Kenya, Fiji, and the Caribbean. It was only when Indians were moved to white colonies like Canada, Australia, and South Africa that they started to ask for limitations of the travel of Indians. Mongia looks particularly at Canada and their experience of Indian migration. It started there in 1905, when 2,000 Indian men arrived in Vancouver. Suddenly, the governor of Canada started being very concerned with the well-being of the Indian men. They started writing letters about the difficulty of the Indian men with the climate. The caste system of India made it difficult to have them work together and said that if this continues, they will have to deport the people. None of this, of course, was actual worry for the Indian men, but it was a way to complain about the Indians being there without mentioning race. So this is one of the earliest examples of how racism begins to be about culture or climate or habits. So instead of saying, we don't want Indian men coming to our country because they are not human or they are lower than us, it is, their culture is different. They have different habits. They don't speak the language. Their religion is strange. This can be called culturalism, but it's more accurately called racism. Because racism is, as we discussed in the previous lesson, a term that now stands for discrimination according to racial ethnic difference of many kinds. Canada, because the Indian men had freely traveled, were not slaves, had to think of ways to send the Indians back. It was here in 1907 that the Canadian government decided to use passports. They said that the system of passports would allow them to ban all people without passports to leave and return to India. Racism grew from this day forwards. Many images of the Oriental, the Indian, the brown or yellow man were spread in Canada. It was not just that this racism that grew led to the Canadian state sending back Indians, but the whole structure of passports, ideas about land being connected to specific ethnic people, was beginning to be clearly created now, according to Mongia. Between 1909 and 1913, only 27 Indians managed to enter Canada thanks to the new system. These people had passports because they could prove that they had lives in Canada and managed to get through the system. But the large numbers that we saw before was not going to be seen. Here, the concept of British subjects started to decline. It didn't mean anything really to be a British subject. There was a difference between being Indian British subject and Canadian British subject now. This was a new thing that was happening, and the passport made the lines clearer. The lines were drawn around race. The mechanism of passports and citizenship was going to be influential in other parts of the empire, and even after empire. As people are denied passports and denied citizenship because of cultural or religious reasoning, but really because of race. Mongia's argument is that nationalism and belief in nations belonging to a land in this way did not start with post-colonial struggles, but before, as a way to restrict the black and brown people from the white settler societies. Questions we can ask ourselves are, what, if any, lessons can the Canadian example teach nation building in post-coup Myanmar? Do all people who live in a country have equal rights, or are certain cultures more deserving than others? How has slavery and slave trade helped shape our world today? The readings for today are Eric Williams, Capitalism and Slavery, Chapter 1, Radhika Mongia, Indian Migration and Empire, Chapter 4. The next lesson will be about the struggle against the caste system and Ambedkar's speech against the caste system in India.